Bom dia e buenos dias. Welcome to the Eco Village Library, podcast that talks about anything ecological living or just playing out, exploring the world, man. So listen up to this episode about water harvesting from the indigenous peoples of the Andes. Today's episode is brought to you by my own voice and my curiosity. So let's begin. Water. Let's talk about water for a second. Just think about it. Just think about the essence, right? It's either frozen, or it's either vapor, or it's a part of my body, it's a part of your body. And the way it travels as well is something that kind of boggles the mind when you think about it. For example, glass of water I drank today, well, I know that it came from a filter that I haven't built myself, so those that built it and treated it for me, they've most likely used a conventional process of water distribution through a complex piping network, maybe which includes water storage, water treatment using chemicals perhaps, or reverse osmosis. But before that, where that water originates could be from anywhere, from the groundwater, for example, which is a common source, or from a surface water body such as a river or a stream, or in some rare cases, an increasing trend today is from the ocean through saltwater treatment plants, although very highly energy intensive. But back to water as an essence, just think about what kind of energy it emits, you know? Think about the energy that you receive after, you know, working outside, let's say on a hot, humid, sunny day without having anything to drink, and you know that sticky feeling in your mouth when you're just completely dehydrated and you just take that, you know, nice ice cool glass of water and bah, man, it just rejuvenates your spirit and your body. Whew. Man, that's just one of the wonders of life. One of the joys of life is just that replenishment, you know? So here's an interesting question. At what frequency are these water molecules pulsating at? Consequently, this frequency ultimately becomes integrated with our own body. Quantum physicists are now in the early stages of discovery, or maybe rediscovery, of the intangible laws of electromagnetism, that stuff of which the eye cannot simply see, which reminds me of the quote from The Little Prince that goes, "What is essential is invisible to the eye. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly." What have ancient civilizations and indigenous cultures known that we are simply not aware of today? Many things, I believe. You know, I'm a huge fan of the quote from Graham Hancock. It says that we are simply a species with amnesia. And so for me, my curiosity pulls me towards searching out the remnants of pearls of wisdom and best practices that are, you know, echoes from our past, maybe. So first place that always comes to mind is the Andes mountain range of South America. So let's dive in to the perspective of the indigenous peoples there. ¿Cree usted que las montañas y los valles, los ríos y las lagunas, los bosques? Do you believe that the mountains and the valleys, the rivers and the lakes, the forests and the crops are living beings? To me, I think so because, well, they all breathe in air, sustain themselves from water and nutrients, and ultimately dispel that which is no longer necessary. The community of Cotama in Ecuador has always looked at water like a family of four brothers and four sisters, all with their own temperaments. The rain, the lake, the springs, and the river are called the four sisters. The brothers, on the other hand, are hail, frost, the rain that comes with a shining sun, and the sudden heavy rain drops that fall without warning. Cuando deseamos comunicar nuestro respeto y reclamo a otro ser humano, entablamos una conversación con él. When we wish to communicate our respects or frustrations with another human being, we first have to start up the conversation. You know, when we wish to communicate our respects or frustrations with nature, we first have to start up the conversation with the ritual. We believe that certain anomalies like the absence of normal rainfall or the appearance of abnormal diseases occur when the harmony of society is thrown out of balance. When this happens, we realize what has led us to the imbalance, and then we determine which one of our water siblings can help us reestablish that harmony within our community. When we ask for rain, for example, we bring frogs to a sacred site and make them crow. Our ancestors used rituals like this to communicate with other beings and forces of nature. This comes from the understanding that we as humans cannot control everything that happens around us, and as such, we know to respect all the other beings that share this space with us. And what we always have available at all times is the power of our own voice. Modern science has not yet been able to completely comprehend the enormous power that the voice has to calm, cure, and communicate with natural forces. However, all world religions have at least recognized this power of the voice, and as such, make prayers aloud for all to hear. Even in the book of John, it says, "In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God." The Word, in this sense, is the spoken word. In the same way our ancestors used the Word to communicate with the natural forces, and have indeed received their replies. And the spoken word, neither from frogs nor from humans, was the only method of communication. When the threat of hail looms in the horizon, or when the water from rainfall was needed, smoke was summoned from the fires below and cast off into the air. The smoke attracts the rainfall due to the amount of solid particles in the air, around which would condense water vapor, and hence push the clouds towards higher and cooler heights, where the droplets would grow larger until they became too heavy, falling below onto the land beneath. Nowadays, throughout the communities of the Andes, whenever black clouds loom in the horizon, threatening to unleash a devastating hail or rainstorm, all the communities hasten at once to lighten their bonfires, which have proven to be very effective. The contact of hot air with the clouds heats the hanging hail, turning them into droplets of water. Recently, in 2009, in the province of Cotopaxi, Ecuador, a wealthy farmer shot off rockets from his land into the sky so that rainfall wouldn't be as excessive. But the neighboring communities began to vehemently oppose this wealthy farmer because, well, they were starting to get worried that they wouldn't receive the rainfall they would need for their own crops on their own land. In more recent times, these feats have been taken up to another level. Long streaks of clouds over many populous areas of the world have certainly left their trace in the sky for all to see and wonder, what the heck are they spraying? These streaks have become infamously known as chemtrails. Spraying barium and aluminum salts, polymer fibers, thorium, or silicon carbide as a strategy to control the climate and manipulate weather patterns. But at what cost? Could the root of these modern efforts of control be perhaps attributed to our own existential threat we feel over losing control and the predictability of our environment? The indigenous know all efforts to control the weather require a very crucial element in order to be effective. Their own smoke-making rituals were always accompanied by tributes made from the most sacred sites as a way to restore balance and harmony in nature. They know that one crucial element was never to be forgotten, or else the ritual would prove to be ineffective. The secret ingredient has always been good faith and good thoughts. Modern science has struggled for a long time to acknowledge the power that thoughts and feelings have over our environment. However, it seems like this is starting to change. Japanese scientist Dr. Masaru Emoto has made an incredible discovery. By using magnetic resonance analysis technology and high-speed photographs, Dr. Emoto studied how the molecular structure in water transforms when it is exposed to human words, thoughts, sounds, and intentions. His discovery was this: water exposed to loving, benevolent, and compassionate human intention results in aesthetically pleasing physical molecular formations in the water, while water exposed to fearful and negative human intentions results in disconnected, disfigured, and unpleasant physical molecular formations. Now, since the main ingredient of the human water body is water, imagine the possibilities or the implications. The communities of the Andes quickly realize that the changing climate has resulted in all different kinds of micro-changes throughout the mountain range. Some areas have experienced increased cooling, others increased heating, more rain, less rain. The bottom line is this: rainfall, temperatures, and periods of drought are harder to predict than ever before, and may come without warning, like sudden rises of river levels, a sudden drought of the wetlands, or frequent saltwater intrusion. So, should we freak out? No. Tranquilo, no pasa nada. Lo fundamental es prepararse para lo que sea. The most important element is to prepare yourself against any change and don't allow the climate to surprise you, whether it's drought, flooding, or monkeys falling from the sky. But if you have to prioritize, drainage control deserves first and foremost attention, and here's why. No matter your climate, sudden rains and floods are more devastating and more costly to repair than other phenomena like droughts. For example, when facing severe drought, not only do plants have time to adapt, but you also have time to adapt as well and make the necessary changes to conserve water and protect your crops. But when the angry brother of water unleashes his heavy rains on a whim, there is no time to react and the consequences could be devastating. These whims will also not limit themselves to only one day nor one month, but can beat us down for a long time, maybe even hundreds of years. So what's the point? The point is this: we can't wait around expecting someone from the outside to come save us. It's essential we take matters into our own hands.
Bueno, comienza con cubrir el suelo por lo menos.
Start by covering the ground at least with mulch or vegetation. This will help protect against devastating erosion. Build ponds or reservoirs to absorb any shock that may come from the angry brother above pouring down waterfalls. We fill up clay pots full of water from the reservoirs we build in, and we plant these pots amongst our seedlings, which grow into big enough trees after about a year and a half that can then trap any kind of water flowing by it, not only from themselves, but for the plants around them. And this can also be of great benefit for drought protection as well. And these techniques are easy to understand because they are based upon thorough observations of Mother Nature. They are easy to implement because we either utilize locally available materials, our own strength, or even the help of our neighbors. There are other practices our ancestors used in long droughts as well. Some of the most useful were performing rituals to ask for rain and by changing the clouds, capturing water from the fog in the air, or by condensing steam that evaporates from the ground. The community of Juncos, close to Bahía de Caracas in Ecuador,
wouldn't have survived the long months of coastal drought without having had the pre-Hispanic pools built in within the banks. Small depressions like channels collect the drops that fall from the trees along the hill's edge. This type of pool, of all shapes and sizes, are built along the Pacific coast. On the bare, naked hills above their homes, the people would plant some species of plants adapted to capture water from the fog, like the coastal native tara, which is a small leguminous tree or thorny shrub native to Peru, which produces pods filled with tannins, most commonly used for manufacturing furniture leather. Por debajo de los bosques que hay en estas lomas, podemos, you know, we can see how these trees capture water from the fog and keep the soil moist without there ever being any rain. At first, we need water to water the seedlings, of course. We did this by raising plastic meshes by 4 by 8 meters, vertically supported by sticks. They accumulated the water drops from the fog at a rate about 8 liters per day per meter square of mesh. We experimented with many different meshes and found that the best results happen when we use diagonal strings tied from corner to corner, which continue to trap water droplets even when the wind changes direction. If we want to heat water using solar energy, we need to put up a glass roof. This way, we would need a roof about 2 by 2 meters to produce a gallon of hot water per day. Throughout the Andes, each valley has its own climate. Because of this, local weather predictions were much more reliable for the campesino than the broadcasted regional ones. Each campesino knew that when the stars shone brightly at night, this would mean a frost at dawn. They knew that if a rainbow appears quite high in the sky, the rain would stop soon. They knew that pausing winds with small whirlwinds indicated that it was going to rain in a couple of days. In the zone of Lake Titicaca, a rain on the 8th day of the month of March would indicate that seeding should be as usual, because the rains will accompany the normal agricultural calendar. An intense rain on this day, on the other hand, would indicate a year of floods, while a soft rain on this day would indicate all the opposite. In a rainy year, it'll be better to plant potatoes, but in a dry year, any grains would do just fine, even better. And if it rains before this date, then everything should be started earlier. All of these predictions are later confirmed if it rains on the same day, or the same way, I mean, on the 19th day of that month of March. In order to predict the climate, it is common to observe many kinds of animals like frogs, reptiles, fish, insects, birds, and mammals. You gotta pay attention to the color and the brightness of the skin, and the timing of when all the frogs and reptiles come out. You gotta pay attention to the spawning of the fish, where they do it, and how much offspring they leave behind. There are signs and clues all around us for the answers we may seek when we turn and ask Mother Nature. From the Amazon region, the indigenous have long ago prophesied about our very unique time in human history. The Eagle and the Condor prophecy of the Amazon speaks of human society splitting into two paths, that of the eagle and that of the condor. The path of the condor is the path of heart, of intuition, and of the feminine. The path of the eagle is the path of the mind, of the industrial, and of the masculine. The Eagle and Condor prophecy says that the 1490s would begin a 500-year period during which the eagle people would become so powerful that they would virtually drive the condor people out of existence. This can be seen in the conquering of the Americas, in the killing and oppressing of the indigenous peoples in the subsequent 500 years, up to and including today. The prophecy says that during the next 500-year period, beginning within the 1990s, the potential would arise for the eagle and the condor to come together, to fly in the same sky, and to create a new level of consciousness for humanity. The prophecy only speaks of the potential, so it's up to us to activate this potential and ensure that a new consciousness is allowed to arise. Hey, y'all, thanks so much for listening to this whole episode. Please show your love if you enjoyed it and rate this podcast wherever you found it. And, you know, let me know what you like to see, what's your curiosity at, and just introduce yourself if you have a project. And, you know, this like this to be a platform for everyone to come together. So thanks a bunch. Lots of love. And until next time.